more. Maybe it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. This hour I'm going to talk about unmasking the riots. And that's the name of this second hour. And I hope to have Tony Gosling in at the tail end of this. And we're going to get some of his opinions from the UK side. He's out of Bristol, England. But this first 30 minutes is going to be my opinion on what's been going on out here in the streets and what's really behind this riotous activity. If you go back in time to the 1700s, I'm going to give just a little bit of history here. The 1760s in France had many intellectual writers that were writing about communal type of activities, a pooling of resources and a sharing of those resources. The idea and the word communism had not been broached at that time. But leading up to the actual French Revolution, you had many writers, and preceding those writers was Rousseau and Voltaire, and they gave rise to getting back to nature, a natural way or something, of pooling and resources and things like this. But towards the end of the 1700s, you had many writers that actually, one, broached the mechanism that would eventually be expanded by Marx and Engels into communism. So early on you had this thought that occurred in France and moved over to UK, was further expanded by Marx and Engels. And then in the late 1800s, a formal group was created called the Fabian Society. And that Fabian Society was headed up by some of the most prestigious names, Bertrand Russell and others, that made up the society at that time. And Annie Besant and Bedleader, Leadbeater and others were some of the founding, members. But what it basically, was doing or wanted to accomplish was a slow socialization of the UK and the public into a socialist state. Okay? That Fabian Society would eventually create the London School of Economics and Political Science. And so there today at the London School of Economics and Political Science, you'll find a stained glass window. And that stained glass window is an anvil with a hammer of creating a new world system based on socialism, communism. Okay, the writings that Marx and Engels put out was to attack capitalism, and the substitute for capitalism was their system of Marxism and communism. A struggle between classes is what they were talking about then. People later on would pick up on these writings, and some of those was Lenin, Trotsky, and Stalin. And they actually, through the Bolshevik Revolution, created a communist movement inside of Russia and overthrew the Tsar, Tsar Nicholas II, and executed his family to get rid of them. there are many ideas that have been broached about how that happened and what kind of a backing they had. Anthony Sutton, writing in Modern Times, says that they were financed by Wall Street and London money people, bankers. There's evidence that adds credence to that in his writings about during the Woodrow Wilson administration. In 1917, Leon Trotsky was in New York City, okay? And he was there to set up communist cells and groups. And he was called on by Lenin and Stalin to join them in St. Petersburg. The Bolshevik Revolution actually was in St. Petersburg, which was the national capital at the time, and the Tsars had beautiful palaces there and so forth. They spent their winters in different areas, but they spent much of the year in St. Petersburg and administered the country through there, while there. At that time of the Tsars, before the Bolshevik Revolution, Russia was beginning to industrialize. And my idea is that the Western industrialists in Western Europe, including England and America, saw this as a threat to their industrial base. So they actually started financing Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin in their overthrow of the Tsar, government, the Tsarist government. And also, at the time, Russia was at war with Germany, so that would take some of the edge off of that. So the Germans were also in favor of funding this small group. Now, getting back to America under Woodrow Wilson, was Leon Trotsky and comrades were granted American passports, placed upon a ship, and it was bound for Finland, and then from there into St. Petersburg. And they were stopped off the coast of Nova Scotia by the Canadians under very suspicions that they might be up to no good. But they consulted Washington and London at the time and got clearance to not interfere with their voyage. So eventually Leon Trotsky joined Lenin and Stalin and others and overthrew the Tsar's government with Western financing, according to Anthony Sutton, and set up the Bolshevik Revolution, amounted to and eventually evolved into a takeover of the Tsarist regime and an establishment of the Soviet Union, a communist state. This went on for years, and David Rockefeller could fly in and out of the Soviet Union anytime he wanted to. So the Western, you could say, money people that set up, Soviet Union, also some of those elements financed Hitler and his rise. That one they had to put down later because he became a threat to the Western money powers. So that's just another little story. But the Western powers had been behind some of this revolution in financing the Bolsheviki revolution, and later they financed Hitler and his rise to power in Germany. Now, they make wars. The big international financiers make wars. They finance both sides. And one of the words to describe that form of capitalism has been crony capitalism. I think today in America, with this uprising, you could say, of these leftist, Marxist communist, male communist left elements, based upon this very, very evil act that was committed by Minneapolis police in killing George Floyd. That's what has excited and has, you could say, motivated many people out into the streets. But before that, before they were motivated out into the streets they experience years and decades of, to say, conditioning. And this conditioning has come about through our, not only our public schools, but especially at our universities, and especially at the most radical universities in our country. Brown, Brandeis, Berkeley, and others. That's where some of the revolutionary, you could say, elements have been going to school and being excited about overturning the American, you know, capitalistic system. But they never speak about capitalism as being crony capitalism, which I stand against. But they use the word capitalism in a very general way. And in doing that, then they do not explain exactly what they mean then by their, you could say, their battle and their struggle against capitalism being the evil. Now, there was one man that came on the scene a number of years ago, Ron Paul, okay, out of Texas. And he put forward the possibility of defunding and ending the Federal Reserve, which has been the stranglehold on our money creation system. And he was motivated. He was not only a U.S. representative, but he became a national, you could say, candidate for the presidency in 2008 and 2012. See, but they marshaled all the forces against him, the money powers did, because they didn't want anyone in the White House was anti-Fed. And he realized that the Federal Reserve had been set up in 1913 during the Woodrow Wilson administration. And you could say this House fella, okay, was one of the instrumental people to set up the Federal Reserve and later the Council for Foreign Relations, which has been a nexus and an enclave for revolutionary thought and overthrow of this legitimate government. Now, we have all of these revolutionary forces. They're financing the Bolshevik Revolution. They financed Hitler. Then they lost control of Hitler, and then they had to mobilize the West to take Hitler out, see. But it's not easy to follow this because they're financing both sides sometimes of the warring factions, you could say. So it's not the easiest thing to try to open yourself up to, because the education system in this country has been one of indoctrinating you and conditioning you into very, very wide, very, very stringent, very, very, you could say, tunnel vision ideas of what's going on. It's not only after you graduate from the universities that you begin by reading other materials that might sound patriotic or patriot or those conspiracy nuts and things like that, that you can begin to open up. You know what I mean? None Dare Call It Conspiracy is one. Tragedy and Hope is another one. Another good book. Pawns in the Game. One of the earlier, you could say, books that really open your eyes up to world revolution and this world communist movement, which is what the world communist movement is being brought about by the wealthiest entities in the world. And they have been financing the Bolshevik Revolution. They've been financing Hitler. They lost control of him, and then they went against him and threw him out, overcame him when he became a threat. Today, earlier on, they financed the Fabian Society. Today, they are financing through the World Revolutionary System. The FIDES Foundation is a key element, a key institution in financing this world revolution through the TIDES and the Alliance for Global Justice, and many other smaller groups are being funded by the corporate, you could say, capitalist, ultra-capitalist, that have actually evolved into much more of corporate fascist world dominant group that's financing the left, the control left, to bring about world communism for the lower classes. The reason why they want world communism for the lower classes is that they can more easily control those people through all of the draconian high-tech means that they have at their disposal now. The internet not only has opened up, you could say, their enemies to what's going on, but also they're beginning to close down conservative and very, very patriot type of sites in lieu of pushing a much more, you could say, left, socialist, communist element in the society that will help them bring about world communism, which will act as a means to control the masses in a much easier way. Max Keiser said the other day on one of his programs that they are working to bring about neo-feudalism. And that's not a bad description. And neo-feudalism would be something that occurred in the Middle Ages where you had landowners, a monarchical system, where the land, the king meted out different interests to different lords and so forth, and then they control the land, and they control all the peasants that were farming the land. And it won't be farming like that today, but it'll be reducing the population down to a much more manageable level, away from a lot lower than the 7 billion, a much more control using all kinds of vaccines, immunizations, Morgellons types of mechanisms, and all kinds of nanotechnology, psychotronics, all this other stuff, chips in your body, like other people, like Gates and other people, are advocating because of this virus. Now, this virus is a means by which to control people outside of constitutional government. And that's what's been going on during this outbreak. In my opinion, the Anglo-American money faction did an operation in Wuhan. I believe that we had a special operations, which we were able to force out of the Wuhan lab for level four, either an accidental release or a clandestine special operations contamination of someone that left that level four that could contaminate Wuhan. I think the Chinese got onto this operation, and I think they in turn have been contaminating the West as a retaliation measure. I believe that the way it worked over the long scale of time, over long periods of time, is that the Western powers led by the British, and the British are masters of geopolitics and mind control and mind control and mind washing systems worldwide. I believe in China in the 1700s was getting to be a world power. So the British, through the East India Company, gave them opium. And that debilitated the Chinese society for a long time. And it made the West a lot of money. When that was pretty well over, then they gave them communism under Mao Zedong, which kept them away from becoming a major industrial, nation. And then I believe the last thing that they gave them was this virus. I just don't think that the Chinese government would have started this themselves internally. So my feeling and my opinion is that it was an operation run by the Western powers. And what it was to take down, I believe George Soros in the last 2 years at Davos has dissed President Xi. Twice he's done this. He has these special dinners that he invites people to. So George Soros has been inviting people to these dinners and then dissing President Xi at those dinners. In October of last year, 2019, Bill Gates and others, Johns Hopkins and others, held an exercise. It was called Event 201. There's a gentleman that's put out this idea that all of these operations, these occult operations especially, have to put out what they call a revelation of method. They have to announce it in subtle ways through, say, this operation, this exercise, in other ways, before the hot operation takes place. It's not only to give the chance to cathex it by the public, but also to trick them You know what I mean? If they're tricked and not wakeful enough to what's going on, that's part of it. And but also is to marshal these very dark forces together to overcome the resistance to their very dark and occult and sinister operations. So they announced this through this exercise in October. Then just a few months later, we have an actual pandemic. And they're saying things like, this is the pandemic one, and there might be two and three that will follow it, see. So that's called revelation of a method, is when you announce it in advance, okay? Which is true to the pattern that we see from this virus. Now, according to Francis Boyle and others, many others, this was a lab-created bioweapons-level virus. Now, other people are saying it's no more than a cold virus, but the proof that it was more than just an annual seasonal cold virus would be found out, or you could say you could fathom that out through the loss of life in the retirement homes. So a normal flu virus does not hit the retirement homes like this one did. So I would maintain that this was on a level that was a greater danger, especially to older people. Maybe not as at the younger population level, but at the older population, it was dangerous on that level. See, I believe that this mission, this operation was carried out. I think the Chinese got wind of it and discovered that it was a Western operation run against them, because China at the time was beginning to be dominant, world dominant. They were building up all kinds of surpluses in foreign currencies, especially the dollar. And also they were stealing all kinds of intellectual property. And I think the Western powers that control steel and still dominant worldwide had enough of the theft of the Chinese Chi-Coms. The Chinese government is a Chinese communist government still. And the hardliners within that government are hardline communists. And I believe they're the ones that wanted to go to cutthroat the West. And there were more moderate leaders in there. There's a struggle going on inside of China today between the moderate type of faction and the hardcore at the top of the Chinese army, the People's Liberation Army, of a hardcore anti-West, anti-America, anti-European group. And I think this hardline group were found out, fortunately, by the West when they started stealing on such a large scale Western intellectual properties. So I believe that the response of the West to start dissing and disengaging from China, and then they run the operation against China to take down China through this infectiousness, through this, you could say, virus. And I believe one of the more dangerous strains was in China. And I believe that some of the first strains that they got exported, you could say, went into Italy and Europe. That's why this virus is hard to evaluate, because the strains are varied. It started out to where there were 12 to 19 strains. Some people are saying 30 or more strains. It does evolve and it mutates. But some of the worst strains may come back in the fall, according to some immunologists and infectious scientists. So Fauci is part of the deep state. All those people are part of the deep state. And one of the most important points I want to make before I finish with this preliminary introduction, before I get over to Tony and see what he has to say. Tony is a supporter of the Liberal Party, the Labour Party, in the UK, and me, I'm on the conservative right, you say here, so that's why we don't quite agree. But Tony has a great knowledge of the overall, you could say, he put up a tremendous Bilderberg site over the years, so he has a tremendous, you could say, overall idea of what's going on, and very, very good interviewer. Today we have generals that are saying, that are assaulting, and these generals are some that Trump insulted, and he shouldn't have done this. He creates enemies that come back to haunt him later, and that's what is visiting him through the generals that he dismissed from certain positions. Those generals are all tied into the deep state one way or another. That's why he finally got rid of them. Good riddance. But in being tied into the deep state, they continuously, and Pat Tillman was one of the guys that was murdered under one of the commands of this big general that now is assaulting Trump. These generals that are saying that Trump is the biggest threat to the Constitution and everything, they are the constitutional threat, not Trump. This is what's going wrong in this country, is the Pentagon has been paid off. They've ostracized with much of the money that they have and hidden it and stolen it. And these, all these big generals up there in the highest realm of our Pentagon are guilty. And that's why they're continuing to use 9/11 to scare us, to warmonger us and control us and use, and then so they can legitimize the Afghanistan. We should have never been in Afghanistan. The 9/11 was an inside job run by some of the worst elements in this country. The most treacherous, treasonous elements did 9/11. All these generals that are in power still or shortly retired have gone along with that and played along with that. Then they go over and they say, oh, we killed bin Laden over in Pakistan in that, you know, hit that house, safe house. No, they didn't kill him. They said they dumped his body at sea. Where's the evidence? They don't have any evidence of bin Laden being murdered and being against that, you know, in that Pakistan safe house. This is the way they're playing the game. They're playing the game because the American public is delusional and they're asleep and they're very ignorant about how they're being used. The biggest elements are bringing about a world communist system. They want to take this country and destroy it through what's going on the streets in America today. And that's the truth about what's really happening. I support those protesters, those safe and the honest and legitimate and well-intentioned and peaceful protesters that are on the streets of America that are objecting and protesting to what happened in Minneapolis a little over a week ago. But I do not support those revolutionary elements in there that are promulgating violence, looting, theft, and disorder and riotous behavior. And that's what I will never stand up. I will stand up on this program until my last breath and defend what's right about this country. And the very establishment of this country, the political system that we have finally resulted in civil rights and suffrage movement, and these successful movements that have granted the right for women to vote, have granted equal rights, civil rights to our minorities. But outside of this system, you're not going to see any communist system that's granting the people those rights or reforming those inequities that exist in a communist socialist state. They did result in America being a country that you could grab your bootstraps and pull yourself up off the bootstraps, go to work and work hard, and also create real good systems of family, good strong families. We have families in certain communities, 50% of the children are born out of wedlock. That is not good. And with children that are born out of wedlock, the propensity and the probability of them falling in to drug addiction or criminal activity is very great. So what we need to do in this country is to try to rebuild the country through gaining religious, God-fearing, you could say good families again, and try to reacquire some of those elements and characteristics that built a stronger country in the 20th century. But we also must be careful and very wary of this leadership that has been leading us in to senseless wars where we'll send boys over to Afghanistan, they come back with their arms and legs missing. That is not tenable. That is not the way that this country should function. The way that this country should function is in a way to continue the principles upon the Founding Father principles, eventually we threw off slavery. We got over that. We granted suffrage to women for voting rights. And then we finally enacted Civil Rights Act, starting to grant the minorities an equal say. But we cannot grant equal outcomes, and there's no guarantee in this country that we can grant equal. We have to provide an equal opportunity, but on a merit basis. But in granting that equal opportunity, we cannot succumb to trying to grant an equal, you know, outcome type of system. But anyway, I want to thank everybody for listening. And coming up next will be I'll interview Tony Gosling for about 25 minutes from out of Bristol, England. And we're going to talk a wide, you could say, sphere of differing subjects. So continue to listen here. In just a second, I'm going to welcome Tony Gosling to the program. So anyway, continue on listening in this hour, and I'll have Tony Gosling up and running in just a few seconds. Thank you for listening.
Critical of it, and maybe turn our televisions upside down. We might get a bit more truth out of them.
Yeah, we could, couldn't we, huh?
Yeah, we certainly could. So anyway, I mean, generally here in the UK, things are kind of easing up. We've got, for example, here in Bristol, in the southwest of England, we've got a demonstration, one of these Black Lives Matters demonstrations going on tomorrow, which I find very strange.
Okay.
I mean, we know, of course, that Black Lives Matter, so White Lives Matter too, and there is a certain amount of racism still around, but it is not the big issue. The big issue is absolutely poverty, and I am suspicious about this whole thing being a bit of an attempt to pit white people against black people, making it a race issue when actually it's an issue of an elite ruling over, despotically ruling over an economy where more and more people are falling between the cracks. Seems to me to have more to do with divide and rule than an intelligent, you know, kind of attempt to fight back. And of course, it's going to be very much in the US. It's going to be playing into the presidential election coming up between Biden. Goodness knows how he's managed to squeeze in, rather than Bernie Sanders. It's a bit like the Hillary Clinton business all again. So you get to choose between two awful people, just as the same happens here in our elections these days. But the curious thing about it, George, is that the Black Lives Matter campaign here in Bristol, I'm not sure about in London, but the when they were last out on the streets back in 2016, we heard them chanting, "Hands up, don't shoot, hands up, don't shoot." Well, I mean, actually, the British police are not armed. And if there are shooting incidents, it's very, very rare. And so this seems to me to be a script that's come from the US. And this is something which, you know, the idea, I think, is that this is a US agenda, not a British agenda. And the people who are out in the streets are singing from another hymn sheet. They don't seem to be, you know, doing these things spontaneously. All this stuff to do with, like, kneeling down, all that kind of thing. It all seems to me very much like a kind of 1984. Type situation where somebody remotely has come up with these ideas and people are just behaving almost like sheep. But it's good to see people getting out on the streets demonstrating about something, certainly.
Yeah, this was a murder. I mean, the problem with this, and we've got to attain justice for that man that was murdered, his family, of course. But the video of it was so insidiously evil, the way it was done, and it had seeded deep down into the psyche of millions of Americans, that insidiously evil act.
Well, all
of
over
murdering
the world,
him.
George. Huh? All over the world. And I must admit,
yes,
looking at it, it looks to me as if this whole thing possibly was orchestrated, because, you know, you're looking at. This is a very sensitive time, of course, for the presidential election campaigns kicking off. And also, what with the lockdown, the idea that, you know, actually we're going to smash the lockdown with this, you know, effectively a pro-democratic party campaign, an anti-Trump campaign.
Right.
You know, it definitely seems to me that it's kind of leading into, you know, playing out into the presidential elections as a way of bashing Trump. Now, I mean, I'll bash Trump, but I want to bash Biden too. I don't like to see incidents like this used in order to steer an election.
Well, you're right about that. This they're trying to continue with this right now. They're in Lafayette Park, right north of the White House, and there's tens of thousands of people that are out in the streets right today. And Black Lives Matter, the mayor, Muriel, had the street painted yellow and big letters BLM painted on the street north of Lafayette Park.
So, I mean, you know, we're two white people talking to each other. Yeah. We've got no real place discussing, whether racism is important or not. Of course, it is important. It's very important.
Yes, it is.
And it does exist. I mean, we had a racist murder by the police a few years ago, a guy called Bijam Ibrahimi here in Bristol. But I think it's an important issue, and no one's saying it's not. But what's much more important, I think, is the looming economic a collapse that's going to be as a result of all of this COVID-19 lockdown. And it may be a collapse, but if it's not a collapse, it will be, and we've already seen, I don't know if you've seen the figures, it's nearly $500 billion has been flowing into the bank accounts of all the richest people in the United States.
Right.
The two top guys being Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg. They're getting hundreds of billions of dollars, these people, out of what's the lockdown, because everyone is looking at it saying, well, these small businesses, we're going to take our money out of those because they're collapsing and putting it into these big tech giant firms who seem to be able to survive the pandemic and actually do quite well out of it. So they've boosted their net wealth massively in this situation, and there are literally tens of millions of people in Britain and in the United States whose small businesses are going to the wall, George.
Right. We've had a surprisingly comeback of 2.5 million jobs created in May. This was unexpected.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that is very unexpected.
Yeah, it was. And the market, the stock market, the Dow jumped over 900 points yesterday on that news.
Well, one is always worried when you get big jumps in the stock market, let me tell you, because it might mean that you've got massive borrowed money cash injections being made by Wall Street, or sometimes this will be happening from the Treasury Department. But
yeah,
you know, there's often big injections of cash in order to try and prop the markets up when they're concerned.
Exactly.
That maybe the markets will be collapsing.
Good point,
Tony. We're literally living in this crazy roller coaster world where we just don't know if we're going to go up or down. And at some point, quite clearly, the whole thing's going to go off a cliff.
Exactly. Good point. They created about 14 different entities through the Fed that they couldn't legally do things through the Fed. So they created these mechanisms to address this problem of the virus. And I don't know out of control. See, huh?
Black has taken a very, very powerful position here, and they're now able to decide which corporations live and which corporations die. You know, they're like the Wizard of Oz, you know, waving their magic wand, right, you've disappeared, and someone else. I mean, this is just literally a kind of doomsday scenario. I had one of the doctors, David Halpin, on my show, which, by the way, has been removed from FM during this crisis, and we're trying to get back on. One of the doctors, David Halpin, he was one of the people very critical of the death of David Kelly, who died, is the government scientist that died at the time of the Iraq invasion. And David Halpin was pointing out that this whole business is a bit like there's this kind of doomsday feeling. He called it a kind of Armageddon type feeling, you know, that no one is quite sure where we're going now, because there's so many things lining up as a problem. And of course, the tensions with China are enormously increasing, all based, I would say, the best way to diffuse that, but it doesn't look as if it's going to happen, is to release Meng Wanzhou, who's the chief financial officer of Huawei, who's detained in Vancouver, Canada, and there are proceedings to extradite her to the United States. So to release her and let her go back to China, I think that would do an enormous amount to release the tensions with the Chinese. I would be very surprised if the US does that, because they seem to be wanting to wind up the tension all the time, George.
It looks like to me, though, there's been a break. It hasn't been announced, but there's been a break with China, because China went too far in stealing our intellectual properties and patents and so forth. And I think the world dominant group, which would be a money-based group out of England, New York, and so forth, has called it quits with China. They just haven't announced it yet. That's what I think.
You may be well be right there. I mean, I look upon the US and China, not as they're not really similar places to live. They're very different cultures.
Right.
But they are, I think, both very much controlled in different ways.
Yes, they are.
And the spider in the middle of the web with both of those countries is a guy who lives at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York. And his name is Henry Kissinger.
Right.
And he has lines into both sides here. In fact, one of the things he's done over the years is he's made fantastic amounts of money by brokering deals between China and the US, technology going one way or the other way. And he always makes sure that if a war was to break out between the two, that both of them would be supplied with as much weapons as it takes to make lots and lots of money out of, so that the battle would go on and on, rather than one side would win quickly. So Henry Kissinger, I think, he's getting on. He's getting very old now, and I think his big old swan song could be a third world war between the two. Now, I realise that there's a lot of sabre rattling goes on, and that something like that many people would think it's unthinkable. But we're in a scenario now, particularly with the murder of Soleimani, the general over in the Iranian general in Iraq,
right,
where the tensions are palpable. We've got the Israelis bombing Syria now whenever they feel like it. It doesn't even make the news, and killing people, destroying things in northern Syria. So if anything was to break out in the Middle East, I feel like I'm giving them ideas here, George, but I don't want to. But I think this is what we're looking at, is that you'd get a scenario where the Russians are already down there. So they would obviously be embroiled pretty much straight away. And they could be, as soon as the Americans come in even further behind the Israelis, the Russians and the Americans fighting, the Chinese will then get involved. And then you've got the two big superpowers. This is a scenario which was set out by Albert Pike all those many years ago.
Yes, yeah, Third World War pitting the Muslims against the Christians. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, well, actually, the Zionists against the Muslims, because you've got the Zionist Jews and the Zionist Christians. Now, I would suggest that neither of those are really being faithful to the love thy neighbor message, you know, or even the Old Testament Ten Commandments. What they're doing is they are trying to usurp those faiths in order to get them to sort of fight each other, and then to create a real distrust of and even more of a hatred of religion, as well as make actually a lot of money out of a war. And the main purpose, I think, behind all of this is really geopolitical. So it's in order to shift boundaries, resources, and also to grab power, because the big thing that comes out of a war is you get a police state too, so you can totally control your population. We've already seen that happening, haven't we, really, with the lockdowns. I think the most interesting thing about it all is the use of masks. Things like, you know, in the UK we're about to have it so you cannot get on public transport without a mask. You're not allowed to go into a hospital without a mask on.
Okay.
But of course that will all stop once you've had the vaccine.
Right.
Even though there's with the existing vaccines, we don't, you know, one of my friends here that I live with, I was just chatting to her earlier on today, she says, oh, well, I always have the flu vaccine, but every year I still catch the flu. We're being told potentially this is going to be a vaccine that we have to have, otherwise we're going to have to go around with a mask on all the time. And that, to me, is the way it's all going to pan out, George. It's going to be done by coercion, so people just get fed up with wearing a mask the whole time and give in and have the vaccine. And I think there will be a vaccine along at some point.
Yeah.
It's just I don't want to have it personally myself, because I don't trust them. I'd much rather have
I don't trust vaccines either. I think you could get sicker with a vaccine by taking it than not taking it, you know?
I think that, listen, the thing I would do with a vaccine is I would like to have a discussion with my GP, with my general practitioner, sit down, discuss it, and then I will decide for myself whether I want it or not. I'm not going to be coerced into anything. Sometimes I think a vaccine might be the right thing to do, but certainly not to be coerced in this.
You could wait a few weeks and let other people take it and then see if there's a reaction that's real bad.
Well, I tell you what, if everyone else takes it, then the disease will die out, and then I won't have to.
Right. Now there's something happening at the World Economic Forum called the Great Reset that's going to happen next January in Davos. And they're going to take the Economic Forum and mate it with environmental issues. That's the latest thing over there. Called the Reset.
Yes, it's a long way future, but this is all Prince Charles, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. He's right in the middle of this. He is.
We've got loads going on with him, George.
Yeah.
I did a show last night about Prince Charles, and it's interesting. Death surrounds him. Of course, he's had two former partners, well, a wife and a former partner who both died in mysterious circumstances, an Australian, Kanga, and then, of course, much better known is Princess Diana.
Right.
But he's also had a whole series of deaths up at Highgrove and at Camilla's house. There was one of their police protection officers that apparently killed himself, although many people say that they didn't think he was the sort of person who would do that. And I mean, this is the problem, is we're looking now at the potential of the Queen retiring at the age of 95.
Right.
Okay, so that is next April. And what's going to happen then? I mean, there were leaks at the end of last year saying, oh, well, you know what's going to happen. I'll tell you what's going to happen is the prince, she's going to retire and Prince Charles is going to take over as Prince Regent. You know, this is quite a powerful job because it means you're above the law. You know, you can't be arrested as a witness. Well, I mean, there are a lot of people who are above the law in reality, George, like police officers don't ever seem to be properly prosecuted over here, and the same sort of thing happens in the States, I know.
Yeah, that happens
at
times.
You know, this opposition, and I personally, I'm not sure that Charles is going to take over, because I think there's quite a lot of feeling in the establishment that because he wants to bring in a kind of a multi-faith, that is to say that he will have something called, it will be called reincarnation rather than resurrection.
Really?
Ourselves rather than praying to God. You know, so there's going to be a whole load of changes in the faith because basically he is not a Christian. He's a multi-faith person. And I don't think the establishment really wants that. And so what we might well see is him taking a role on the world stage, like at the World Economic Forum, for example, as you say.
Right.
Maybe it will skip straight to Prince William.
They favor Prince William, don't they? The real powers like Prince William, don't they?
Well, I was just reading something today that apparently Prince Charles has got very annoyed with Prince William, and he doesn't let him use his special house up at Balmoral anymore.
He doesn't.
A constant drama about his family because there's so much backstabbing goes on. I mean, you know, to say nothing of Harry and Meghan being spun out of the whole situation by Harry being whisked off to Vancouver and then down to LA, away from the situation, and also, of course, the character assassination of Prince Andrew. And I mean, he's the only person that's really suffered because of the Epstein revelations, but of course, there are hundreds of other people who are rich and powerful who visited Epstein who should be named, but they haven't been named. You have to ask yourself, why not? Well, Andrew was made an example of, and everyone else who went to see Epstein is now nervous, biting their nails, say, I don't want to end up like Andrew. So they're very much behaving themselves. And it was, of course, a blackmail operation he was running. But so this place in Balmoral where...
That would be the summer retreat for the Bluebloods, right?
But anyway, Charles said that the reason he doesn't like William anymore is because he's not allowed to have as much time as Kate's parents with the two boys, you know, the little ones, Kate's. So this is what this tells me is that William doesn't really want Charles and Camilla around his kids.
That's right. I bet you that's it.
Think about Charles's very close relationship with Jimmy Savile, for example.
You can understand
be a little bit nervous.
You hit the nail on the head there, Tony. He doesn't want him around those children.
Huh? And I find it fascinating because they've got actually quite a lot more power than people realise. But listen, another thing we must mention, George, here is the whether or not this COVID-19 is man-made or not. And if it is, where's it come from? Because Richard Dearlove, the Bilderberg ex-head of MI6, has just come out and said he definitely believes it was man-made.
Yeah, it is. Francis Borrell, who is a world authority in this area, and also Henry Nieman, testifies on radio programs, and they have the coding all down. It was SARS. It had an HIV component. Possibly a TB strand was in there. But it is it's dangerous for certain people with respiratory dispositions that are bad. Okay? which being older, yeah. the elderly.
The underlying
kids. Yeah.
But the kids can't really catch it. This is the interesting
thing. Well, the immune system, if you have a strong immune system, you can have an episode, but it's a milder one than some older people that could die, because in these retirement homes is where they died off a lot, dozens.
Look, the problem is, okay, so the thing that I find so most interesting about this pandemic, number one, is the way that the World Health Organization were bullied into calling it a pandemic in the first place.
Yes.
At the same time it was called pandemic in March, in Britain we downgraded it away from being a pandemic down to a less dangerous disease. And yet, if the reason it was forced into becoming a pandemic was because this triggers a whole load of laws, particularly in the United States, to allow much more federal control and destruction of civil liberties. That's why I think it was made into become a pandemic. But also, the censorship has been unbelievable, George. I mean, really, on the mainstream press, we're getting a whole load of one-sided nonsense almost 24/7. And loads of the really good, the very, very best of the analysts and the experts who are being critical of the lockdown, who are being critical of government policy of various sorts, have literally been, as they start to become very, very successful, like tens or hundreds of thousands of hits on YouTube, etc., YouTube is just yanking them. It's absolutely obvious to me.
Yes, and Amazon took off a book too that on COVID-19 they didn't want out either. They had to go put it back up just recently.
Well, when you start seeing this systematic censorship, when you start seeing strategic news stories coming out in order to try and squash, for example, we had a bit of a sort of a battle over here about whether the children should go back to school or not. Now, obviously, the parents wanted them to, the kids wanted to, amazingly.
Right.
But as that debate was running in the National Parliament, so these stories came out here on the, all over the news about something called Kawasaki disease.
Yeah,
and they were saying, oh, it's linked to COVID-19, and it only occurs in children. Now, this is just a strategic lying. This is psychological warfare.
Exactly.
It's only caused as a bad reaction to vaccines. It's nothing to do with the COVID-19 whatsoever. And yet this traveled all around Britain, all over the main news stories for 2 or 3 days around about the time of the debate. So it's very obvious to me as a journalist that the news media is being used to hoodwink people, to lie to people. The agenda is mandatory vaccination. That's really what they want. And Bill Gates obviously is behind much of this, behind John Hopkins University, behind Imperial College. Neil Ferguson now thankfully has been sacked, booted out as a policy advisor. And also, of course, the BBC get a lot of their funding as well from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I think Robert Kennedy in the States has done an absolutely brilliant job in just tearing apart Gates's attempts to try and pretend that he knows anything about vaccines, which he's been killing people with his vaccines for the last 20 years. What I'd really like to see, though, George, is Andrew Wakefield, who's now over in California, isn't he, have a live public debate on TV.
Yes.
Bill Gates. I think Wakefield would wipe the floor with him.
I think he'd wipe him out. You bet. I think so.
Unfortunately, our mainstream media is not going to provide that live TV debate for us because that's part of their agenda. They want to try and persuade us to all get vaccinated, which certainly anyone with half a brain cell is going to definitely think twice about that and definitely not buy into that agenda because it's an evil agenda.
Yeah.
An evil agenda to force people to take medication that they don't really need. And you know what? At the end of the day, we could be looking here at the mark of the beast down the line. The ID 2020, which Bill Gates wants to introduce. I don't know if you saw it in his 2016 conference on 2020. He didn't. He had what looked like a Jesus on a cross up on the side of the hall that they were meeting in. Actually, it was a giant phoenix on a cross. Bill Gates playing it. What religion is he part of?
Well, they're into the occult, you know, practices. That's the problem. Oh, Bilderberg is not happening this year, right?
Well, maybe. I mean, it's last weekend, isn't it? That's when it should have been.
Yeah.
But I would suggest they've just gone underground, George. They've been wanting to do this for a long, long time. Let's look at where Mr. Pompeo was, you know, and all the various fanatical warmongering Zionists, the people who are behind the attempt to globalize the planet. By force, by coercion. I mean, that's effectively what they want to do. And it's interesting, isn't it, to see Kissinger, obviously, is another one to watch. He would have been there, obviously. The idea really is to just stop any press scrutiny of it again by saying, oh, we're not having a meeting.
Maybe they did it by Zoom or one of these teleconferences.
Huh? No, they won't do it on a teleconference. No, definitely not. Because they have to meet face-to-face. If you're doing some sort of dodgy deal, George...
I got you.
Paranoid about Skype. Paranoid about email.
You'd be recorded that way too easily.
To be in a completely sealed off area. They have the whole place checked and double checked and triple checked for bugs, and they need to be making...
They may be delaying it for the end of the summer and then meet, see?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. I think they'll be meeting, at least the steering committee, the key people will be meeting anyway.
I got you. That's probably what they've done, and they can transact enough diabolical deals, make enough diabolical deals for the rest of the year.
They'll definitely be strategizing how they can roll out this. I mean, the thing is, with the ID 2020, it really does look like this biblical mark of the beast, George. This is the idea.
Yeah, it is.
An identification that you can then use in order to kind of go back to normal. So you're going to be an Untermensch. You're going to be a lower class citizen who might be carrying the virus, might be trying to murder people around you by spreading the virus. Until you've got this ID 2020. And of course, it doesn't take much imagination to see that transpose itself into a microchip, which also can be used for financial transactions. And particularly if we have an economic collapse of some sort, you know, that then we'd be looking at, this being that kind of,
They're trying to use this as a facade to reset the financial debacle that exists too. See what I mean?
You don't have to have ID papers here in Britain. You know, there's no such thing. But this is what Bill Gates, I think, and his friends want to bring in.
Yeah, I agree.
Your identity thing around wherever
more
you go.
1984 stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things I love about the Americans. I think came up with it. You Yanks came up with it, didn't you? The COVID 1984 and the brave new normal. You know,
us Yanks, we get creative occasionally.
you've got great headlines. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being with us this evening, Tony. And what do you have any closing statements? You got 30 seconds here.
Well, yeah, I think, it's just really important for us to dust off our Bibles and actually read some of this stuff. Because certainly as I was looking through what ID 2020 is, and, you know, particularly the idea of a planned pandemic,
the idea that
can be overreact. We've been massively overwriting the actual figures of people who are directly dying of this disease, and including loads of people who had many underlying health conditions.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Exaggeration.
The
point of that is away our civil liberties.
This is a destruction of Christianity and our liberties all at the same time.
But it's also evil. I think it's, you know, you've got to look at what's happened. If this is a man-made virus, releasing that out into the public is an evil act, and yet nobody seems to even want to acknowledge that fact. So whoever it is getting away with it. And we can't allow that to happen, George.
Well, thank you. I agree with you. But thank you very much, Tony, for being with us this evening. We certainly appreciate all your views and comments.
If you want, thisweek.org.uk, you can still catch our stuff. Loads of links up there and various shows to listen to if you want to. And a whole load of stuff about Prince Charles. If people are interested in a bit of background about him and the various mysterious deaths that have been surrounding him over the years.
Okay. We'll put that up on the site. Thank you, Tony. Okay.
Cheers, George. God bless.
Yeah. Good night.